All right, guys, we're going to go ahead and get started. I'm Tarek, addict, alcoholic. And we call this The Wall, Big Book Workshop. So what we one of our primary objectives this weekend is to share with you our belief systems and our experience regarding what any length looks like based on the program of action that's suggested to be your program of recovery. And that is what the doctor's opinion and the first 164 pages of the big book describe. Not our way of not drinking or not using, but our way of living, which we are sure has its advantages to all. So everyone can benefit by the tenets and the values and the principles that are rooted in this program. And one of the first things we want to talk about, which might be could very well be the most important thing we talk about this weekend, is this. Let me pull it up real quick. Can you guys see this all the way in the back? You guys see that?
Yes.
I'm sure all of you are familiar with it. This symbol of a circle and a triangle has been around for ages. And long before Alcoholics Anonymous decided to use it as its symbol, it signified the idea that mind, body, and spirit could be together as one. And what our founders did was apply our three legacies to this symbol. The three legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous, which we use at our Cocaine Anonymous meeting, are recovery, unity, and service. It was in our big book until 1994, and due to some legal situations that we're going to end up in the courtroom and the possibility of some members of Alcoholics Anonymous losing their anonymity, they decided not to pursue it because they were going to have to release last names, and they just decided it wasn't worth that, so they removed it from all of their conference-approved literature and other items. And I really wish it was still in the book, but it's not. And I've been working with this framework that I want to share with you tonight. I believe that the three worst places that an addict and alcoholic can get to are walking around with no purpose. You don't feel useful. You feel useless. Might be the worst place for an addict and alcoholic to get to. And then there's this idea that I don't feel like I'm a part of anything. I'm very separate. My mind's constantly telling me that I am separate from you. I don't have a sense of unity in my life. And then the third is where we exist in this state that lacks proportion and lacks the ability to think straight. Drugs and alcohol are not the only areas where I've lacked proportion and the ability to think straight. I've had that happen with money. I've had that happen with women. I've had that happen with jobs. I've had that happen with athletics. I've had that happen with many areas in my life. The Big Book's definition of insanity is not doing the same thing over and over expecting a different result. The Big Book's definition of insanity is this lack of proportion, which means I don't have this ability to control how much, and I cannot think straight. That's what insanity is. And we have that around drugs and alcohol, and we also have it in many areas. Our idea is that if we visit the recovery process, mainly steps 1 through 11, your thinking will change. It's a byproduct of the step process. It's a requirement. You will not successfully consummate this program and this process and not have your thinking change. And if you stay around for a while and give yourself to the process over and over, you will continue to have your thinking changed. The best definition of freedom that I've ever heard is by a guy named Krishnamurti. And he says freedom is the ability and the capacity to doubt and question everything. Therefore, I don't allow any type of culture or framework to think for me. Now, sometimes I fall victim to that because I'm asleep. But I've done the work enough and I seek resources outside of the 12 steps, along with the 12 steps, never instead of the 12 steps, to expand my spirituality. And therefore, I'm very open to doubting and questioning everything. And as a result of having that capacity, I've changed my mind about a lot of things. A lot of things that I would have gone to the mat for are no longer true to me. And some things that I thought I'd never go to the mat for are now true to me. And that's going to change again. And it's going to continue to change because I want to live free. I don't want any culture, any tradition to do my thinking for me. If something else is thinking for you, you are not free. That's my opinion. So the recovery process, steps 1 through 11. Obsession gets removed. We begin to have some proportion in our lives. We no longer put drugs and alcohol in our bodies, and the physical craving no longer takes place. The symptoms of addiction and alcoholism are gone. Therefore, I am recovered. That's recovery. I'm no longer recovering. I was only really in recovery one time. Now it's about seeking and deepening my relationship with a God of my understanding. I didn't get up and pray this morning and ask God to keep me clean and sober. The thought never occurred to me that I would not be clean and sober today. Does everybody get that? I didn't make a choice today. It's been removed. So there's recovery. Now we talk about the unity. So if you have recovery, you've now just combated the insanity. You are now sane to a certain level. I don't know if any of us will completely achieve complete sanity, because that means all the fear is gone, all the resentments are gone. And I don't know about you, but I have some judgment still, and I do suffer from fear from time to time. So I'm not 100% sane, but in comparison to how I was 9 years ago, that's light years from where I am today. I have recovered. I experienced different levels of sanity in my life. And therefore, I have some proportion and I do have the ability to think straight. So then we move into unity. Well, unity, if we have it in our lives, we will not feel separated from. And so how do we have unity in our lives? So the way I want to describe this to you is, it starts with the home group. When you guys leave this place, having a home group is vital. I cannot emphasize that enough. So I have two home groups, so three home groups actually, two in Cocaine Anonymous, and I have one in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a job at one of my home groups. I've done a lot of service work. A lot of people think that service work, like cleaning up after meetings and driving guys to meetings and being a greeter at a meeting and making sure the coffee is made, making sure all the chairs get put out and all the chairs get broken down, they believe that's service work. I don't. I think that's service work for the fellowship, which keeps us united. The only service work I'm going to talk about in this circle and triangle is taking other men through the steps. But for unity, we got to have service work at the group level and at the area level in order to stay united as a fellowship. So you get a home group. You get a job at that group. I'm going to show up and I'm going to greet people this week. I'm going to show up and I'm going to make sure all the chairs are put up. I'm going to make coffee. I'm going to get there and make sure I talk to the newcomer that nobody's talking to. That's what I mean by get a job. But let's take this deeper. Accountability. The longer I have been clean, the longer I'm clean and sober, the more I realize that having a group of men in my life that I am completely transparent with, that know all of the darkness that I'm walking with, that know all of the current struggles and all the limitations that I'm experiencing, that's accountability. They know what's going on. They hold me accountable. They have spiritual consent with me, which means I've said to them, I care more about living and dying, so please do not worry about hurting my feelings. Tell me the truth. Tell me the truth as you see it. What are you observing in my life? Where am I off the beam? That's I can't emphasize enough how important that is to stay around here and have sustainable recovery. And so, if you can experience that home group and having and being surrounded by a group of like-minded individuals that do the work out of the big book, and you have this accountability structure, you will experience a phenomenal level of unity in your life. You will feel like you're a part of something. And then we have this idea of being of service. Well, how do I feed my spirit? My spirit's going to get fed this weekend. You guys are going to help us much more than we're going to help you. That's for several reasons. One of which, you're taking me back to 9 years ago. The other reason is God's going to work through me. Because I do the work on a regular basis, I am a hollow bone, and God will channel through me, and He will touch some of you in this room this weekend. That's why I'm here. God's going to use me as an instrument, and He's going to demonstrate through me what He can do. I don't know who that is yet, but I promise you it will happen over the course of the weekend. That feeds my spirit. I grow more spiritually when I sit across the table one-on-one than I do when I work the steps myself. Does that make sense? The real work in Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous is not me working the steps. The real work is when I sit down and show someone else how to work the steps. That's the most vital part of recovery. That's the jewel of our program. Your recovery depends on you putting yourself in a position where you can take someone through the steps. Everything we do here, the traditions, the concepts of service, they all culminate into the facilitation of carrying this message out of this big book. So that's your question there. What's the message? The message is the way of life described in the first 164 pages of the big book. That's the message. You go into an AA meeting and throw that out for a topic, and you're going to get 30 different answers. The message is the 164 pages and the way of life described in those pages. So if you can perform actions in all three of those areas, you'll experience physical, mental, and spiritual wholeness. You will recover, and you will be given the power to help others. That's how this process works. So don't ever let anybody tell you you don't know how it works, because I just explained it. That's exactly how it works. In addition to that, there's a chapter titled How It Works. So it's very clear. It's not a hidden secret. Well, maybe it is. Because it doesn't get talked about enough. So one of the things I do with the guys I sponsor on a somewhat of a frequent basis, especially the guys that are in their first few years, is I want to locate them. When I meet with them once a month or however often, I meet with a lot of guys once a week. If I'm taking them through the steps, Brandon and I, we talk almost every day. And in some form, these are going to get touched in our conversations. Where are you in your step work? Where are you in your home group? Where are you in accountability? What's going on with the guys you're sponsoring? When was the last time you made an amends? So we can find out if we're in the middle of the circle triangle. Because if you're not in the middle of the circle triangle, then you're going to be walking on the fringe of our society. And the wolf, or wolves, crack, meth, heroin, OCs, benzos, the wolves are just hanging out, waiting for you to drift to the fringe. And they're going to be... What we ask you to do here is going to be like kissing your little cousin or your daughter or your son compared to what alcohol and drugs are going to ask of you. There's a voice in your head saying, man, this is a lot what this guy's talking about. Has anyone in here just chronic relapser? I was a chronic relapser for 3 years. And once I sat down and I saw what the real solution is, which is recovery, unity, and service, I clearly saw how I'd never engaged the process. Not once. I thought going to meetings, that's it. Talk about my problems, go to meetings, stick with the winners. Clean up after the meeting, smoke some cigarettes, right? That's what I thought it was. But the hidden secret was revealed to me. And it was revealed to me through this circle and triangle. And I was around the rooms for almost 18 months before I really got this. I sponsored a bunch of guys in my first 18 months, but I did little with Unity, and I did little with continuing to work the steps. So I began to suffer, and I got bored, and I felt useless, even though I was sponsoring men. And I realized I'd missed a bunch when I sat down one night with another man, and he asked me where I was in all three of these areas. And it was clear to me that I was hanging out in one part of a three-part program, but I was expecting the results of all three. And so tonight, go back. Ask yourself. Bring your memories current. What was going on in terms of this stuff in your last relapse? Did you have it? Were you grounded in recovery? Were you grounded in unity? Were you sponsoring men through the 12 steps? Because your mind will tell you, man, I don't know why I keep relapsing.
This thing doesn't work.
It'll tell you that too. And so if you become a sponsor and you have a guy relapses and he comes back to you, I did this. This happened to me last night on the phone. A guy says, I've been trying the 12 steps. I go to big book studies. I've done the deal. I can quote the book and I can't stop smoking crack. And I said, hold on. Let me ask you a couple questions. I said, let's talk about your first 8-step list and all the people and institutions on it. And I want to know if you've approached and made all the amends on that list and if you've paid back all the money that you owe. What do you think the answer was? Exactly. No, I haven't done that.
And just so you know, that sponsorship lingo is if you ask a yes or no question and you don't get an answer, you get some explanation, the answer's no. It's real simple. Did you do all your amends? Well, you see, no, it's not.
Yes,
that simple.
It's amazing. And if you get to the, I hope all of you get to that place where you're sponsoring people. We're going to try to give you some tools to be effective sponsors over the course of the weekend. And so this gentleman I'm on the phone with last night says he hasn't made his amends. I asked him about the 10th step, but I asked him specifically about accountability and whether he was sharing all of his struggles and his darkness. And he says he had three people he was doing that with. And then I was like, well, what about the 11th step, prayer and meditation? He's like, oh, no, I was doing that. And so then I asked him what it was. And he goes, well, I was reading 84 to 88, and there was a couple other books I was reading, and I was saying some set prayers. And I said, what about meditation? Well, I've never been good at quieting my mind, so I don't do that. I said, so you don't have an 11th step, because 11th step says prayer and meditation. And so it was clear to him he had no meditation. And then I asked him if he'd ever engaged sponsorship. And he said, well, I had one guy, but he couldn't stay sober.
Did he also make himself available to sponsor?
I didn't ask that question.
Because often you'll ask that question to people, how many guys were you sponsoring? Well, I raised my hand and I made myself available. So how many people were you sponsoring? I raised my hand and I made myself available. Let me try this again. So how many people were you sponsoring? Well, I raised my hand. And it's funny how the alcoholic mind, addict mind, can take a simple question. The answer was zero, but he didn't know that. He had to explain it.
This is exactly what I'm talking about, the way he just described it. The delusion that we are under, that we were actually in the program. And so what I did last night was clearly paint a picture for this man to see that you were not in the program. So if you're not in the program, I find it virtually impossible to be in fit spiritual condition. And people relapse for one reason. They're not in fit spiritual condition. If you fit the description of the addict and alcoholic that's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you must have a vital spiritual experience. And you must take the steps necessary to enlarge your spiritual experience. The hope of every addict and alcoholic is the growth and maintenance of a spiritual experience, to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Why? Because we get a daily stay of execution, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. When I'm not in fit spiritual condition and my old master crack cocaine comes knocking, I'm going to answer. So, recovery, unity, service. You're going to go to a lot of meetings and people are going to say it's a two-part problem. It's a two-fold illness. I don't believe that. I used to believe that. When I, my first 18 months, this is what the first step was like. I have a physical craving to alcohol and cocaine, and that's why I'm powerless, because once I start, I cannot stop. And I have this mental obsession, which makes my life unmanageable, because all I think about is getting high and drinking, and I can't manage my life. I can't pay my bills, my relationships fall apart, etc., etc., etc. And so I was 18 months clean and sober, and my life was completely unmanageable, but I had no obsession to smoke crack, no obsession to drink. And I knew I'd missed something. And then I was introduced to this concept. And then he took me to page 64 in the big book. If you could for me, please. Resentment. Last paragraph. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more addicts and alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we addicts and alcoholics have not only been mentally, physically ill, we've been spiritually sick.
Huh?
That's three, right? Mental, physical, and spiritual. Once the spiritual maladies overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. So a lot of people will argue or debate with me that, well, 99% of the humans on this earth are walking around with a spiritual malady, a conscious separation from God, from themselves, that they have problems in personal relationships. They're full of fear. They can't seem to be of real help to other people. They're hunted by misery and depression. They feel useless. And they have that as part of their problem, so therefore the alcoholic and the addict must only suffer from a two-part problem. I get that the symptoms of addiction and alcoholism are loss of control and the inability to stay away from the first one, no matter how great the necessity of the wish. But the steps in the relationship with God are designed to treat the internal condition. And then when the internal condition gets treated, the mind will no longer tell you that drugs and alcohol are a solution to any problem. And therefore, you don't put them in your body and you don't activate the abnormal reaction. So if the program and the relationship with God is designed to treat the internal condition, it must be part of the problem. That's why the internal condition festers and it tightens in your chest like a spring. It tightens in my chest like a spring, and it gets so tight, I gotta have relief. And if I'm not getting a relief from a personal relationship with my Creator, I am gonna get relief from whiskey, cocaine, or a gun to my head. Something's got to loosen the spring in my chest. That's why I believe it's a three-part problem. It's the core, it's the root, it's the crux of the problem. And that's why we have a three-fold program to treat all three of those areas: the mind, the body, and the spirit. And that's one of the most important things we're going to discuss all weekend long. And with that, I turn it over to Brandon.
I'm just going wherever. Mm-hmm. All right, so turn to page 106. That's not correct. 108. So I'm going to argue against what Tarek said a little bit and then bring you back exactly to what Tarek said. There's a lot of people that we see in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous, that they don't have to do all this. They, when they say meeting makers make it, they mean it. They're not trying to cause you harm when they say that. What they're selling you is what they believe to be true. How many times you've been in a who in here has never been in a meeting before? Okay, so you guys have all been to a meeting. You hear all these kind of things. And how often have you heard somebody like they share about this terrible experience that they went through, and they said, I got in a fight with my boss, and I locked my wife out of the house, and I waved a gun at a guy in traffic. And you know what? I realized I got to get to more meetings. That doesn't sound right. But there's people that sell that to you because they go to a meeting and they get a sense of relief from a meeting. I'm not one of those guys. Meetings did nothing for me. I was probably 30 days sober going to meetings, and the internal condition was on me. It was twisting and it was squeezing. I know I didn't want to die because I'd been through that experience. But I didn't want to keep going on the way I was. And they kept saying, get to more meetings. And I'd go to more meetings and wake up the next day still feeling that twisting and turning and just sense of angst, right? So at the bottom of page 108, the problem of which you struggle usually falls within one of four categories. Now, this is in Two Wives. This is in a part of the book that most people think is unimportant. Hopefully, we will finish up some of the other stuff to where we'll spend some time in it. Because these last chapters, people usually go to working with others, and they think that's the 12th step, and then they stop. But there's four more chapters after working with others that is about practicing these principles in all our affairs. And this is one of those chapters. Well, I'm not a wife. I don't need to read this chapter. But there's incredible sponsorship tools within the back of this book. And the way that we hope to be taking you through this workshop over the course of this weekend is to arm you with different tools for sponsorship, because I can guarantee you one thing. If you're not out there sponsoring people, you're not having a sense of helping others to the experience that you've gone through, you're going to go get fucked up again. Period. And that's not just Brandon's perspective. That's me looking at so many other people that have been through this experience. They come in, things get good for a little while, and they go out. But they never tried to pass that message along. So, type one, your husband may be only a heavy drinker. His drinking may be constant, or it may be heavy on only certain occasions. Perhaps he spends too much money for liquor. It may be slowing him up mentally and physically, but he does not see it. Sometimes he is a source of embarrassment to you and his friends. He is positive he can handle his liquor, that it does him no harm, that drinking is necessary in his business. He would probably be insulted if he were called an alcoholic or addict. This world is full of people like him. Some will moderate or stop altogether, and some will not. Of those who keep on, a good number of them will become true alcoholics or addicts after a while. Is that anybody in here? Anybody relate to that? I'm not talking about like relate to it like back when you were in high school or when you started drinking, like relate to it at the end. Because like all this stuff makes sense to me, but this happened like decades ago. This isn't real to me today, right? So then type two. Your husband is showing a lack of control, for he is unable to stay on the water wagon even when he wants to. He often gets entirely out of hand when drinking. He admits this is true, but is positive that he will do better. He has begun to try, with or without your cooperation, various means of moderating or staying dry. Maybe he has suffered, beginning to lose friends. His business may suffer somewhat. He is worried at times and is becoming aware that he cannot drink like other people. He sometimes drinks in the morning and through the day also to hold his nervousness in check. He is remorseful after serious drinking and drugging bouts and tells you he wants to stop. But when he gets over his spree or run, he begins to think once more that he can drink or use moderately next time. We think this person is in danger. These are the earmarks of a real alcoholic or addict. Perhaps he can still tend to business fairly well. He has by no means ruined everything. As we say among ourselves, he wants to stop. Anybody there? Okay, anybody in the room? It's two? Okay, this describes me kind of maybe shortly after college when things were kind of starting to get a little squirrely, right? Then there's type three. This husband has gone on much further than husband number two. Though once like number two, he became worse. His friends have slipped away. His home is a near wreck and he cannot hold a position.
Maybe the doctor has been called in, and the weary rounds of sanitariums and hospitals has begun. He admits he cannot drink like other people, but does not see why. He clings to the notion that he will yet find a way to do so. He may have come to this to the point where he desperately wants to stop, but he cannot. His case presents additional questions, which we shall try to answer for you. You can be quite hopeful of a situation like this. Anybody relate to that one? All right. Now, on some level, you're all full of shit. Because I will point out to you that, like the third line down, it says, maybe the doctor has been called in and the weary round of sanitariums and hospitals has begun. Anybody have any idea where we are? It's a sanitarium.
It's new age sanitarium.
We changed the terminology to make you feel better about it, but back when this book was written, there were only three hospitals in the world that dealt with drug and alcohol abusers. Well, in the 70s, their insurance started paying for people to go to these things called treatment centers and recovery places. So we changed the name. Before then, they went to the loony bin. They thought we were all fucking nuts. They thought there was no chance for us. So this is a loony bin with a different name, guys. You're all there. We'll go on. Type 4. You may have a husband for whom you completely despair. He has been placed in one institution after another. He is violent or appears definitely insane when drunk or high. Sometimes he drinks or uses on the way home from the hospital. Perhaps he has had delirium tremens. The doctors may shake their heads and advise you to have him committed. Maybe you have already been obliged to put him away. This picture may not be as dark as it looks. Many of our husbands were just as far gone, yet they got well. Anybody one of those? Yeah, we got some of those too. Okay, so I got good news and bad news in here. If you are truly a type 1 or type 2 and honest with yourself, which if you're here, you're probably not very honest with yourself, so you're probably worse than you think you are. But if you think you're a type 1 or type 2, good news. Meeting makers make it. Okay? The circle and the triangle that we see up here may be unnecessary for a type 1 or type 2. You can maybe just focus on the unity side, the meetings. Maybe go through the steps one time. Maybe do a fifth step. Make a couple amends to the family members close to you. You're good. And then you can go around and perpetuate the idea that meeting makers make it. But then we've got these other two, the type 3 and the type 4. And if you happen to be one of those, the good news is you're fucked. You have no chance whatsoever of staying sober by going to meetings. But the good news is, at a deeper level, that if you do all three parts of the circle and the triangle, as Tarek said, it only works 100% of the time. So the problem is, we go to these meetings with these types 1 and type 2s, or possibly heavy drinkers, or the guy that was in his later years and he got a DUI because he had two glasses of wine instead of one, and then he had to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and he showed up to these meetings, and then what happened was he found a fellowship. And he's like, you know, these are really nice people. I'm going to hang around with these people. And I get to go to lunch with them, and I get to hang out with them. Maybe I'm retired. And I get to have a group of friends that I meet with every day, get to have coffee, shoot the shit with them, and then go to lunch. Awesome. That guy doesn't have to sponsor anybody because he's not an alcoholic. He's just a guy that got pinched with a DUI, that went to some meetings and found some friends. So that's not me. And if one of those guys gets me as their sponsees, I'm going to die. Because how he's going to tell me to get sober is to come to the meetings, drink coffee, clean the ashtrays, go to lunch with us. Come on. And I'll do that for a couple days, and then I'll go drink. And then I'll come back, and I'll be like, man, that didn't work. And he's like, need to go to another meeting. There's another meeting tonight. Come on. Go to a meeting, have coffee, go to lunch, go to a meeting tonight, have coffee, maybe smoke a couple cigarettes. Didn't work. Have to have a vital spiritual experience that only comes from the three-part solution. So some of you, hopefully, we're letting you know why some people that works for. Because they're not like you. They don't choose to go and spend 6 months out of their year in South Georgia just because it's fun. That's not what normal people do. That's not what type 1 and type 2 alcoholics generally do. So hopefully some of you see this at a different level, what we're really talking about here. So does anybody in here know what step AA was founded on? We're not going to make fun of you. Just throw it out there.
12.
Most people say the 12th step. The reality is that the... So Bill Wilson, co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, he got this... He got struck sober. This guy named Debbie Thatcher came and delivered a message to him. 2 months sober, Debbie Thatcher came and visited Bill. So another thing that you'll hear in meetings is that you need to be a year sober before you start sponsoring somebody. Thank God that is not the case, because Debbie Thatcher was only 2 months sober when he carried the message to Bill. So Debbie comes, tells Bill that, hey, I'm sober, and all I have to do is I have to come share this experience with you. And Bill's like, well, screw you, I'll just keep drinking. I don't have to share my liquor with you, right? And so he plants a seed to Bill that the spiritual experience may actually help me get and stay sober. And so Bill goes, gets sober. He found out about the allergy from a guy named Dr. Silkworth, and starts to get into the spiritual program. And so Bill, for 6 months, runs around trying to tell every bum and alcoholic that he can find about this experience of finding God and how it'll get you sober. And what do all the alcoholics do that he talks to? Bill, shove it up your rear end. I don't care about your spiritual experience. Blah, 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 whatever, you know? And so he goes back to Dr. Silkworth and says, you know, I keep telling all these guys about this spiritual experience I'm having, and none of them are staying sober. And so Dr. Silkworth says, well, why don't you tell them about the hopeless nature of alcoholism? Why don't you tell them about the fact that you drank this way and you couldn't stop? There was nothing you could do to stop. And once you got them hooked on the fact that you're like them, then give them the spiritual experience. So Bill goes out of town to Akron, Ohio, and his business deal kind of falls through, and he's kind of looking, he's like, you know, I'm stuck in Akron. I can go to the bar, or I can, you know, do that thing of trying to carry this message to somebody else. So he gets hooked up with this guy named Dr. Bob and sits down with Dr. Bob, and he tells him about how he drank. He tells him about the hopeless nature of alcoholism. And Dr. Bob's like, this guy drinks exactly the way that I drank. And then Bill gives him the idea that we suffer from an allergy, that once I put the first drink in, I can't stop. And all of a sudden it clicks with Dr. Bob, because Dr. Bob's been trying a spiritual solution. Dr. Bob's been going to the Oxford group. He gets up in the morning and he says, God, please don't allow me to get drunk today. And he's kind of nervous, and he's a doctor, so he takes a drink to calm his nerves. Eventually he gets drunk. Next day, wakes up. God, please don't allow me to get drunk. I got to call my nurse. Takes the drink. Goes off to the races again. Tries this over and over again. Keeps praying to God and can't get sober. But then Bill comes in and says, you can't even have what the first drink, because the first drink sets off the allergy. Dr. Bob, being a doctor, it makes sense for him. So he just needs to not have that first drink. So Bill hooks him with the spiritual side. He gets it. And then Bill outlines the program of action. He outlines, if you look on page 263, if you've got a fourth edition, the original six steps of the Oxford group. He outlines those. Complete deflation. Dependence and guidance from a higher power. Moral inventory. Okay, so complete deflation, that's step one. Dependence and guidance from a higher power, steps two and three. Moral inventory, step four. Confession, step five. Restitution, steps eight and nine. Continue to work with other alcoholics, 12. You can see that there's some holes in there. But he outlines this to Dr. Bob, and Dr. Bob says, you know, I'm willing to do those first four, but I'm just not willing to do that fifth one there. I'm not willing to do that restitution. You need to understand, I'm a doctor in this town, and I'm respected. And I don't want to go out there and go around and tell everybody that I'm an alcoholic, because, you know, that's probably going to hurt my business. So I'll do all those other ones, but I'm not going to do that one. So what happens? Dr. Bob goes away to Atlantic City for a medical convention, and he's no sooner on the train, he's drunk. So Dr. Bob comes back, he finally gets sober again, and he tells Bill that he's willing to go through with it. Bill thought he was willing to go through with the surgery that he was getting ready to have, but what he was saying is, I'm willing to go through with the entire program. So he spent the rest of that day, which was June 10th, 1935, going around and making approaches with people that he had harmed, and letting them know that he was an alcoholic and that he struggled from this disease. And Dr. Bob never drank again. So you see, Alcoholics Anonymous was founded on the eighth step, founded on the willingness to approach those that I had harmed and make things right. So, yes, that couldn't have happened if Bill didn't carry that message to Dr. Bob. But if until the moment that Dr. Bob was willing to submit to the entire process, Dr. Bob couldn't stay sober. And so there's people sitting in here right now that when we talk about what any length looks like, you're probably saying, well, I don't want to do that. That seems a little hard. But if you get another alcoholic or addict that is properly armed with facts about themselves, that knows how to sponsor and take you through the steps in a proper way, that step, the one that most people have trouble with, 8 and 9, that looks so gloomy right now, by the time you get to it, it's not that bad. And I can tell you, now I've seen plenty of people die from this thing. I've sponsored two guys that are no longer walking among us. And that's not a real fun thing to experience, a guy that you've grown close with to one day just disappear, leave our existence here. But there was another guy who, I don't know where he is right now. He was an old drinking buddy that he approached me years before the incident I'm going to talk about to try to get well. And I took him to some meetings, and then he came to the conclusion that, you know, that seems like a lot of work and I don't want to do that. At that time, he was still married. He still got to see his kids every day. And I saw him at a Christmas party. And he came up to me, and he was, this guy's a lover. I mean, he came and he loved all over me. He was hugging me and telling me how much he loved me. And
and how he respects what we do within the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous so much. But, you know, work was just hard, and you know, I was having some trouble with the wife, but everything's good now. So I think now that the stress is gone, I'm probably okay. And I just told him, well, you know where we are if you need our help. And that was a Christmas party. The night of the Super Bowl the following year, the day after the night of the Super Bowl, he had a restraining order slapped on him from his wife. He couldn't see his kids anymore. He tried to get sober again. That didn't work. And then, you know, a couple other crazy things happened to him. So finally one night he comes to the conclusion that he no longer wants to live. Okay? So he slits his neck and his wrists, and he sits in a hotel room and he bleeds out for 15 hours and doesn't die. Finally calls me, tells me what happened. This is a Friday night. Tells me what's going on with him. Can you come see me? Yes, I'd love to come see you. I'd love to help you. Meet with him on Saturday morning. We go to lunch. He asked me to be a sponsor. I go to page 50, 59 and 60. And I take him through the steps. I explain to him what's necessary at each step. Talk about one. I talk about two. I talk about three. Talk about four. Talk about five. We're doing good. We're rolling. We get up to 8, 9. He's like, whoa. Well, I don't want to do that. So here a guy, a week earlier, doesn't want to live. Wants nothing to do with this existence as we know it. The night before is asking for help, and by lunch the next day, I don't want to have to go talk to that bitch about this stuff. That's what he said. So doesn't want to live anymore, but isn't willing to make an appearance. Even though we haven't done the first step yet, he's way out there in the future. So there's going to be a lot of things that we talk about here tonight and tomorrow and through the weekend that probably seem like that's a little much. But like Tarek said, what drugs and alcohol ask of you versus what these steps require of you, there's no comparison. This stuff is easy. And if it still looks really, really hard for you, maybe you're not done. Maybe you still got another run in you. Because I know when I got here, and I was beat into a state of reasonableness, I didn't care. I would do anything. And so for me, that's what any length looks like. So,
thanks, B. All right, guys, we're going to take a 15-minute break.